ghosts, specters, whatever you want to call them, they've been around for thousands of years.
Apparently she died from a tooth infection in one of the upstairs rooms in the house.
As have the locations they haunt. History of a Haunting podcast tells you all about these famous, infamous, and almost famous locations, and why they became terrifying places to visit. Grab a glass of wine and settle in with your hosts, Archie.
I mean, that was definitely the wrong thing to do.
And Carrie.
Nobody asked for it, Carrie.
Nobody fucking asked for it, but hey, my podcast, and I'll say what I fucking want.
Two people just winging it in life, and this podcast. So enjoy this week's episode of History of a Haunting.
Hi, guys. Welcome to History of a Haunting. I am one of your hosts, Carrie.
And I am Archie.
And Laura is off.
Poor Laura.
Poor Laura. She is off. She got her second vaccine, and it took her out. It took her out.
Took her ass, took her money.
Yeah, yeah. So she is going to sit this episode out this week, but that's okay because I will not be a part of next week's episode. I am going to leave everything in the hands of Archie and Laura. She's going to do my part. We're finally moving into our house after 700 years. And yeah. 400 million hotels. And yeah, so we are finally moving into our new house here in Raleigh. So I am not going to be, well, I don't have internet. they don't come until, yeah, they don't come for 2 days after we get in. So yeah, so Laura and Archie are going to, you know, take over the show, as it were. The bossy bitch is taking the week off.
So podcast and her job.
Yeah. Yeah. So it will probably be a real, lovely time, for Laura and Archie. I hope you all give them your rapt attention, because it's still gonna be the same quality. Like, you know, Arch is still going to do his kick-ass history, and, though Laura did confirm with me today which location, because I guess there's two different ones. And I'm like, this is the one I'm thinking of, but you're going to need to double check with Archie, because he may do a history. And if you're doing a different haunting, because there's multiple. So get with her on that, just to doubly sure. At any rate. Yeah, so poor Laura, we love you, we miss you, and we will all three be back together when, Arch? Let's see.
Not the week after you're gone, because she's gone for Zane's birthday.
Oh, that's right. So then we're not back together until the episode that comes out on the 22nd of May.
Wow.
Yeah, we'll record together on the 15th, but yeah, that's right. And then Laura's gone again because her son's birthday, and they're going to parts unknown. Just kidding. We know where they're going. They're going to the beach. but anyway, so let's get into the episode. We do have a couple of EVPs to go over, and we do have a dedication for this episode. We also have a Patreon of the week. So, yeah, I know we haven't had one in a while. And so I'm super excited. We haven't had too many EVPs. But the first, really the only EVP that I wanted to, mention is we got a review from a lovely, lovely woman, who said that our show is, quote, it's good, but, so it wasn't a bad review, but they did mention in their review that they love our show, and the banter that we have was a little hard to kind of get past in the beginning. But once they did, then, you know, they loved the show, and, you know, the banter kind of grew on them and what have you. And they've tried to recommend our podcast to their friends and family. And unfortunately, the folks that she's recommended us to just don't like the banter. And so to that, we definitely want to say thank you so much for recommending us. We are so grateful mm-hmm. that you think enough of us to recommend us to your family and friends. The other thing is we are a comedy podcast. So we are going to sit around and talk like, you know, friends do when they're talking about a haunted location or their favorite place or whatever topic they are just really passionate about. So we are going to have conversations about it. We are going to dish on it. We are going to, you know, be snarky and joke around and what have you. Because again, comedy podcast. So we definitely understand if that is not your thing. And we are very grateful that these folks gave us a try. We are so grateful that you guys gave us a try. I'm talking to them. They're not listening to us, but maybe, you know, this person who left their review, we're done. Maybe this person who left the review will hear this and tell her friends that we said, thank you for giving us a shot. However, we're not changing the format. The banter is still going to continue. And we enjoy it and our listeners enjoy it. And so I did want to kind of address that review. I would like to say for those of you who have tried to refer, you know, recommend our podcast to family and friends. And they're kind of along the same vein. They don't like that banter, that, you know, back and forth, what have you. They just want to hear the story. I definitely would recommend a podcast called Supernatural with Ashley Flowers. And Ashley Flowers is one of the hosts of Crime Junkie. Crime Junkie is an amazing true crime podcast. And she has a fairly new podcast on all things paranormal. And it's a fabulous podcast, just like Crime Junkie is. And she does more of the, let's get right into the story. So if that's what you're looking for, I highly recommend that you check out Supernatural with Ashley Flowers, because it really is a phenomenal, phenomenal show, just like Crime Junkie is. So that's my EVP for the week. And then we do have a brand new Patreon of the week and a lovely, lovely woman by the name of Sarah. And Sarah is actually joining us from a whole other country. She is coming to us from down under. I'm not even going to try to do the accent because we want to keep her. And
thank God.
I would butcher it anyway. But anyway, yes. So Sarah, thank you so much for joining us on this crazy Patreon ride. We hope that you're enjoying the exclusive content. We are very, very grateful for your generosity. And to that we say, we love you, welcome, and here is your standing ovation. Yay, Sarah. Okay, thank you so much. Yeah. Lastly, I'm talking a lot, but you know, I got to get it all in because I'm not here next week.
Yeah, you got to make up for next week.
I got to make up for next week for sure. I am, as everybody by now knows, my family and I are in temporary housing. We're staying at an extended stay hotel until our house is finished being built, which it is. We move in next week, like I've said 700 times. But I have met some really lovely people while I've been here at the hotel. And the other day, I met this amazing woman named Marcy. And Marcy is an archaeologist. And she is also a murderino, which is a fan of My Favorite Murder. She's a fan of And That's Why We Drink. We got to talking and I told her I was a paranormal investigator. And then I told her about the podcast. So she was on her way back to her home in Georgia that day and was going to binge listen to our podcast. Because she loves the way that, you know, we're very much like, And That's Why We Drink in My Favorite Murder, and where they like talk and their comedy podcast. So she's an archaeologist. So I let her know the topic that we were going to be doing today. And what she doesn't know is that I want to dedicate this episode to her because she was just a really lovely woman. And I had the best time talking with her. And Yeah. So Marcy, I hope you have enjoyed the show. And whenever you get around to this episode, I'm not sure when she was going to, like, where she was going to start. She was going to start at the beginning or the middle, you know, you never know. Mm-hmm. But Marcy, when you get around to this episode, I really enjoyed meeting you, and we had such a lovely conversation. Again, congratulations on your recent engagement. And so this episode is going to be dedicated to Marcy, my new friend who is an archaeologist, and I really think she's going to enjoy the topic.
Know how horribly, horribly bad we butcher a lot of the names in this location.
It's going to be pretty terrible. So Arch, why don't, since you started out, it's going to be another one of these episodes, guys, where we kind of share the script and he does a part and I do a part, because again, it's one of those, the history and the hauntings go kind of part and parcel with each other. So Arch, why don't you let everybody know where we're taking them today, and then we'll apologize to the country.
All right, everybody. Well, we are going to talk about the curse of King Tut, or what's better known as the curse of the pharaohs.
Yay!
We apologize to Egyptians because we are going to butcher your words.
A gazillion percent. But I did just check our analytics, and Egypt is not a country that listens to us. So, hey.
Hey, all right. But,
and, you know, I Egyptians around the world. Sorry. Yeah. But yeah, as far as they might let us into the country. Because the country anyone in the country is not listening to us. So
yeah, we're good.
We're good. We're good.
We're good for international travel. Is that what you're saying?
To Egypt, yes. We are. Other countries, probably not.
Probably not.
No.
All right. Well, all of the information I compiled was found on Wikipedia, The Guardian, and anecdotes from Live Science and HistoryToday.com.
Cool. Wait, before you get started, I want to say Archie wrote this entire script. So it's fabulous and I loved it. And so I want to give him all of the credit because I put no effort into this.
You have a lot going on. So,
Thank you.
So it was fortunate that this was so blended.
Yeah, yeah. And you did, as always, a wonderful job. So, all right, sorry, go on.
And I hope Marcy likes it.
I hope Marcy likes it too, yeah.
All right. So, the curse of the pharaohs, or the mummy's curse, is a curse alleged to be cast upon anyone who disturbs the mummy of an ancient Egyptian, especially a pharaoh. This curse, which does not differentiate between thieves and archaeologists, is claimed to cause bad luck, illness, or death. Since the mid-20th century, many authors and documentaries have argued that the curse is a, quote, real, in the sense of having scientifically explicable causes, such as bacteria or radiation. However, the modern origins of Egyptian mummy curse tales, their development primarily in European cultures, the shift from magic to science to explain curses and their changing uses, from condemning disturbance of the dead to entertaining horror film audiences, suggests that Egyptian curses are primarily a cultural, not exclusively scientific phenomenon.
I disagree.
There are occasional instances of genuine ancient curses appearing inside or on the facade of a tomb, as in the case of the mastaba of Kentika Ikhiki of the 6th dynasty at Saqqara. These appear to be directed towards the Ka priests to protect the tomb carefully and preserve its ritual purity rather than as a warning for potential robbers. There had been stories of curses going back to the 19th century, but they multiplied after Howard Carter's discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun. Despite popular misconceptions, no curse was found inscribed in the pharaoh's tomb. The evidence for curses relating to Tutankhamun is so meager that Donald B. Redford viewed it as, quote, unadulterated claptrap, end quote. And Donald Bruce Redford is a Canadian Egyptologist and archaeologist, currently professor of classics and ancient Mediterranean studies at Pennsylvania State University. So he has a little bit of clout.
But does he have a paranormal podcast? I mean, when it Wikipedia apples to oranges, yeah. Arch. Apples to oranges. Great job on the pronunciation. Like, you just plowed ahead. I have no idea if you were right or wrong, but just for
the neither do I.
Okay, great.
Marcy, write that down.
Marcy, write that down. Yeah. For the purposes of my portion, I'm just going to call him King Tut, like a good old white American. So curses relating to tombs are actually extremely rare, probably because the idea of such desecration was unthinkable and even dangerous to record in writing. And that's something that's really kind of not just limited to Egyptian royalty. In many countries, it was considered to be traitorous to even discuss, the king's death or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So to desecrate their final resting place really would be considered the ultimate treason and blasphemy kind of a thing. So,
gotcha.
So these curses most frequently occur in private tombs of the Old Kingdom era. So the tomb of Ankhtifi, who was in the 9th to 10th dynasty, contains the warning, quote, "Any ruler who shall do evil or wickedness to this coffin, may Hemen," I'm just plowing ahead, guys, sorry, "Hemen," which was a local deity, "not accept any goods he offers, and may his heir not inherit." So, oh God, I'm not going to do this as well as you did. The tomb of Kentika Ikhekihi. Sure. I guess.
I think you nailed that one.
Oh, okay. Really? Because I made it sound Hawaiian, but all right. also from the 9th to 10th dynasty, contains an inscription that reads, quote, "As for all men who shall enter this, my tomb, impure, there will be judgment, and end shall be made for him. I shall seize his neck like a bird. I shall cast the fear of myself into him." Which I was like, ooh, don't love that. That's scary. So curses of the Old Kingdom era are less common, though more severe, sometimes invoking the ire of Thoth or the destruction of Sekhmet. Zahi Hawass quotes an example of a curse, quote, "Cursed be those who disturb the rest of a pharaoh. They that shall break the seal of this tomb shall meet death by a disease that no doctor can diagnose." Mm-hmm. Wonder if anybody went poking around some hidden Egyptian king's tomb and then poof, COVID hit.
Oh God.
So now, hieroglyphs were not actually deciphered until the beginning of the 19th century by Jean-François Champollion. Wow, check me out. Too bad Laura's not here.
You, French lady.
I'm telling you. I got it. Laura's not here, so she can't be like, you butchered that so hard. We're just going to pretend I said it like a native French woman. Anywho. So they were not deciphered until the beginning of the 19th century. So reports of curses before this are simply perceived as bad luck associated with the handling of mummies and other artifacts from the tombs. In 1699, so just a couple years ago, according to Laura's son, Louis Penichet, wrote an account. There go all of our France listeners. They were one of our top countries. Damn it. Louis Penichet wrote an account in which he recorded how a Polish traveler bought two mummies in Alexandria and embarked on a sea journey with the mummies in the cargo hold. And I find this story so fascinating. The traveler was alarmed by recurring visions of two specters, and the stormy seas did not abate until the mummies were thrown overboard. So now, Zahi Hawass recalled that as a young archaeologist excavating at Qom Abu Bilo, He had to transport several artifacts from the Greco-Roman site. Turns out his cousin died on that day. His uncle died on its first anniversary. And then on the third anniversary of the excavation, his aunt died. Apparently, years later, when he excavated the tombs of the builders of the pyramids of Giza, he encountered the curse, quote, "All people who enter this tomb, who will make evil against this tomb and destroy it, may the crocodile be against them in water and snakes against them on land. May the hippopotamus be against them in water and the scorpion on land." So whoever wrote this curse wasn't just content with just the crocodile and the snakes. They're going to throw in a hippo and some scorpions. So even though he wasn't superstitious, he decided not to disturb the mummies. However, he was later involved in the removal of two child mummies from Bahiriya Oasis to a museum and reported that he was haunted by the children in his dreams. The phenomenon didn't stop until the mummy of the father was reunited with the children in the museum. So I'm sure it's much more impactful and meaningful and serious than what it reminds me of, but it does make me think of, you know, the Ben Stiller movies, Night at the Museum, when they had to bring, you know, the tablet to, you know, what was the name of? Rami Malek's parents in the other museum, the British Museum. That's what it makes me think of. Anyway, because I'm a stupid American, I'm admitting it. So anyway, he concluded that the mummies should not be displayed, though it was a lesser evil than allowing the general public into the tombs, which, good call, if you ask me. So Hollis was also recorded, or he also recorded an incident of a sick young boy who loved ancient Egypt and was subject to a miracle cure in the Egyptian Museum when he looked into the eyes of the mummy of King Amos the First.
Oh boy.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I should have written in and looked into a little bit more.
Ooh.
But because of the Egyptian craze that started after King Tut's tomb was
discovered, yeah,
is that for some unknown reason that I can't think of, I mean, it's known, I can't remember what it is, people thought that ingesting or eating the actual mummies themselves, their bodies, was miraculous. In a sense that it cured diseases or blindness or things of that nature. So people in Britain and Europe at this time were eating parts of the mummies that were being discovered left and right.
Okay, and now that, I have the grumpy cat face.
Yeah, that was kind of mortifying to me to find out about.
That's
yeah, people so believed that ingesting the mummies would cure this ailment or that ailment, that they would actually eat parts of their bodies. So
that is the most disgustingly horrific thing I can think of.
Oh, I get to turn it on you now.
I see how this feels, and I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not gonna stop disgusting you. But I had this coming. So kudos. Thumbs up.
Finally had one to share.
You did. Good job. Jesus H. Holy crap.
Ugh.
Huh. Okay. Nasty caca. Yuck. Okay.
Okay. The idea of a mummy reviving from the dead, an essential of many mummy curse tales, was developed in the book The Mummy, or A Tale of the 22nd Century, which was an early work combining science fiction and horror, written by Jane C. Loudon and published anonymously in 1827. Louisa May Alcott was thought by Dominic Montserrat to have been the first to use a fully formed, quote, mummy curse, plot in her 1869 story, Lost in a Pyramid, or The Mummy's Curse.
Wait a minute, hang on. Louisa May Alcott, like Little Women, that author?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Because there's so many different ones, so many different Louisa May Alcotts.
I mean, it's like Bob White, you know, it's a very common name. You don't know.
Her 1869 story, Lost in Pyramid, or The Mummy's Curse, a hereto forgotten piece of mummy fiction that he rediscovered in the late 1990s. However, two stories subsequently discovered by S.J. Wolfe, Robert Singerman, and Jasmine Day, The Mummy's Soul, also released anonymously in 1862, and After 3,000 Years by Jane G. Austen in 1868, have similar plots in which a female mummy takes magical revenge upon her male desecrator.
As she should.
As she should.
But also, why are there so many books like released anonymously?
Because female writers were not taken seriously.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Jasmine Day, therefore, argues that the modern European concept of curses is based upon an analogy between desecration of tombs and rape, interpreting early curse fiction as proto-feminist narratives authored by women. The anonymous and Austen stories predate Alcott's piece, raising the possibility that even earlier, quote, lost mummy curse prototype fiction awaits rediscovery. A belief in a curse was brought to many people's attention due to the deaths of a few members of Howard Carter's team and other prominent visitors to the tomb shortly thereafter. Carter's team opened the tomb of Tutankhamun in 1923, launching the modern era of Egyptology. The famous Egyptologist James Henry Breasted worked with Carter soon after the first opening of the tomb. He reported how Carter sent a messenger on an errand to his house. On approaching his home, the messenger thought he heard a faint, almost human cry. Upon reaching the entrance, he saw the birdcage occupied by a cobra, the symbol of the Egyptian monarchy.
Whoa.
Carter's canary had died in its mouth, and this fueled local rumors of a curse. Arthur Weigel, a previous inspector general of antiquities to the Egyptian government, reported that this was interpreted as Carter's house being broken into by the royal cobra, the same as that worn on the king's head to strike enemies on the very day the king's tomb was being broken into. An account of the incident was reported by the New York Times on the 22nd of December, 1922.
I'm here for it. I would do the same. Right. I think after my amazing funeral, like Prince Philip had, trumpets, choirs, I would like to be buried sort of Indiana Jones-esque with poisonous snakes surrounding my tomb. Give me just one moment, please. Okay, sorry. The first of the mysterious deaths that relate to King Tut was that of Lord Carnarvon. He had been bitten by a mosquito and later slashed the bite accidentally while shaving. I don't know if you've ever done that, but that doesn't sound fucking pleasant to me. Mosquito bites are awful, and even just like...
No, you fucking shave around that shit.
Yeah, so he didn't, apparently. So it became infected, and that resulted in blood poisoning. Carnarvon died in Cairo at age 56 to almost the second that a citywide blackout occurred, which I was like, oh, really?
Yeah.
Also, his dog died in England. So it doesn't state if it was like he died, blackout, dog died, or if it just like, oh, by the way, his dog died in England, but the dog could have died in England like 5 years later or whatever.
No, no, it was pretty much at the same time.
So kind of in succession. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
Why'd you have to take out the dog? That's rude. oh, but right. They preferred cats. Gotcha. Okay. Apparently 2 weeks before he died, Marie Corelli wrote an imaginative letter that was published in the New York World magazine. Apparently she quoted an obscure book that confidently asserted that, quote, dire punishment would follow any intrusion into a sealed tomb. A media frenzy followed, of course, because, you know,
media,
big humans, and media, so a media frenzy followed with reports that a curse had been found in the king's tomb, though this was untrue. I believe it's true.
God damn it.
The superstitious Benito Mussolini, who had once accepted an Egyptian mummy as a gift, ordered its immediate removal from the Palazzo Chigi. Sorry to all of our Italian listeners. Chigi? Chigi? Oh, it's probably Chigi. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
Like Chianti, Kiki, you know. Oh, sorry. I've got to associate everything to alcohol, okay? The death of Lord Carnarvon 6 weeks after the opening of King Tut's tomb resulted in many curse stories in the press. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the creator of Sherlock Holmes, who also wrote a book that fairies are real. Did you know that he was super deep into the paranormal belief? Did you know that about him?
I did not.
You didn't?
I did not. No. And so reading up on this and doing my research, this is one of the anecdotes I found on a different website. It's like, oh God, he was crazy. Was he crazy?
Hey. He was not crazy.
Okay. All right. That was me judging. I apologize.
Absolutely. Anyway. So he suggested that Lord Carnarvon's death had been caused by elementals created by King Tut's priests to guard the royal tomb, and this further fueled the media interest. We've discussed elementals a number of times when we were discussing Lemp Castle, and isn't there an elemental in the Ohio State Reformatory, I think?
I'm not sure if that's the location, but I think it's close by.
Yeah, Elmo the Elemental. I think that was. I think that was
about Elmo.
Elmo, yeah. Anyway, we have discussed them before on this podcast, but obviously that further fueled the media interest. Arthur Weigall reported that 6 weeks before Carnarvon's death, he had watched the Earl laughing and joking as he entered the king's tomb and said to a nearby reporter who went by the name of H.V. Morton, quote, I give him 6 weeks to live. So that's a little coincidental. And since I don't believe in coincidences, that was definitely a curse. Anyway. I am the utmost authority on everything, as I like to think. At any rate, the first autopsy carried out on the body of King Tut by Dr. Derry found a healed lesion on the left cheek. But as Carnarvon had been buried 6 months previously, it was not possible to determine if the location of the wound on the king corresponded with the fatal mosquito bite on Carnarvon.
And
I was like...
Yeah, the rumor is that it was in the very same spot.
Which I mean, that makes for a much more interesting story.
Mm-hmm. I apologize for not including that at a strategic point.
That's okay. Yeah, I mean, you found this is a good strategic point. But I found that really interesting. I don't know. I don't know. I believe in curses. I mean, you know. Anyway, so yeah.
Right. Well, a study of documents and scholarly sources led the Lancet to conclude as unlikely that Carnarvon's death had anything to do with Tutankhamun's tomb, refuting another theory that exposure to toxic fungi or mycotoxins had contributed to his demise. The report.
I'm sorry, he was eating magic mushrooms?
He was exposed to toxic fungi.
So magic mushrooms. That's another theory.
Is that there were toxic fungi growing in the tomb.
I mean, probably. It's a really old tomb.
They were theorizing that that had contributed to his death.
Okay, so magic mushrooms killed him. Go on.
Not quite.
Breaking news.
The report points out that the Earl was only one of many to enter the tomb on several occasions and that none of the others were affected. The cause of Carnarvon's death was reported as, quote, pneumonia supervening on facial. Oh, that's a special word, isn't it? Erysipelas, a streptococcal infection of the skin and underlying soft tissue. Pneumonia was thought to be only one of various complications arising from the progressively invasive infection that eventually resulted in multi-organ failure. The Earl had been, quote, prone to frequent and severe lung infections, according to the Lancet, and there had been a, quote, general belief that one acute attack of bronchitis could have killed him. In such a debilitated state, the Earl's immune system was easily overwhelmed by erysipelas.
That's entirely possible. I mean, and when was this? Let me scroll back through my shit.
1925? I'm looking at it. I can't even find the date. It's prior to 1925.
So, yeah, okay, around, like, okay, so the 1920s. So right. That is entirely possible, especially because, you know, it's common knowledge that if you have a bite or a sore or whatever on your body, you don't get it treated, it becomes infected. Sepsis is a thing. The infection gets into your bloodstream. It's carried through the rest of your body. If he was kind of sickly anyway, and he was kind of prone to lung infections, like, it's entirely possible that this just became something that got out of control. If you don't heed Archie's advice and you shave a mosquito bite, I mean, granted, it is 2021. We have advanced medical care. They didn't 100 years ago. But The moral of the story is don't shave a mosquito bite.
And don't share razors.
Don't share razors. So, I mean, it's entirely possible that if he were kind of prone to illness and what have you, that this is what caused it. Possible, yes, but probably not. It was definitely the curse. So, in 1925, the anthropologist Henry Field, who was accompanied by Breasted, visited the tomb and recalled the kindness and friendliness of Carter. He also reported how a paperweight given to Carter's friend Sir Bruce Ingram was composed of a mummified hand with its wrist adorned with a scarab bracelet marked with, quote, "Cursed be he who moves my body. To him shall come fire, water, and pestilence." I mean, I need that on my grave too, Arch. Write it down. Archie, write that down. Soon after receiving the gift, which, by the way, if I were an archaeologist and I do love everything about Egypt. I'm fascinated by all of it. I'm a big, big fan of the Brendan Fraser documentary, The Mummy. clearly that happened. I'm fascinated by everything having to do with Egypt, but I don't know as I would want to be gifted a paperweight of a mummy's hand.
Hand.
Yeah, even if it's adorned with, like, any kind of jewels. Certainly not scarabs, because we all know what happened in that documentary, The Mummy. Things.
That would be something I unwrapped, looked at, realized what it was, and immediately ejected it from wherever I was standing.
Mm-hmm, 1,000%. So anyway, this guy got this lovely paperweight wrapped in a curse. So soon after receiving the gift, his house burned down, followed by a flood when it was rebuilt. Make it up what you're going to.
Interesting.
Yeah. So Howard Carter was entirely skeptical of such curses, dismissing them as Tommy rot, which that doesn't sound pleasant at all. I don't even know what it is, but maybe a vulgar form of poppycock. I'm not really sure.
But yeah, that's probably.
Pish posh, you know, balderdash, bunkum, you know, whatever.
Bull.
Yeah. Hooey. And so he was skeptical of these curses, dismissing them as Tommy rot and commenting that, quote, the sentiment of the Egyptologist is not one of fear, but of respect and awe, entirely opposed to foolish superstitions, end quote. In May 1926, he reported in his diary a sighting of a jackal of the same type as Anubis, the guardian of the dead, for the first time in over 35 years of working in the desert, although he did not attribute this to supernatural causes. Cool. I tend to think that, you know what, everybody listening knows what I fucking
everybody think. Here knows.
Everybody knows what I think. But I also feel like, and I don't know any Egyptologists. I don't know. I just met my very first archaeologist the other day. So I don't, like, I readily admit that I don't know what their study is, what their training is. I don't know any of that. But it seems to me that if the sentiment of the Egyptologist is not one of fear, but of respect and awe, entirely opposed to foolish superstitions, they would be a little bit more respectful.
Yes,
I guess.
Yes, I totally agree. They're not out to desecrate or steal any of these things. They have a genuine curiosity to know how these people lived, what they did, what they didn't do,
and what they believed.
Yeah, and what they believed, but they
so if they believed these curses would go into effect if their tombs were desecrated.
Well, like, and here's the thing. I said before about how archaeologists and whatnot could succumb to these curses, but it's also said that locals who live there would not be affected by these curses.
Really?
Which is funny because it's saying, hey, thieves will be cursed. Well, what happens if the locals are the thieves? Because the locals aren't supposed to be cursed. Well, it's pretty well documented. The locals are the thieves.
That's interesting. Because
nobody else knows this shit is here. So go and steal the gold, steal all the good, because apparently we're going to be okay. No.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. Like,
I've learned a lot of things researching this.
Good. Did you have fun doing it?
Oh, yeah.
Good. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, he did see a jackal, the same type as Anubis, and he hadn't seen one in 35 years of, you know, working in the desert, but he didn't attribute it to supernatural causes, which he probably should have. At any rate, that's on that, as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Well, skeptics have pointed out that many others who visited the tomb or helped to discover it lived long and healthy lives. A study showed that of the 58 people who were present when the tomb and sarcophagus were opened, only 8 died within a dozen years. All the others were still alive, including Howard Carter, who died of lymphoma in 1939 at the age of 64. The last survivors included Lady Evelyn Herbert, Lord Carnarvon's daughter, who was among the first people to enter the tomb after its discovery in November of 1922. She lived for another 57 years and died in 1980. And
what an American hell? Was she like a child?
I guess. I mean, math is not her friend, but if you want to do it. I've had enough cocktails. I'm not going to.
Okay, so he took his 3-year-old daughter into the tomb of a mummy. Okay, go on.
and American archaeologist J.O. Kinnaman, who died in 1961, 39 years after the event. No wonder that in 1932, a decade after Tutankhamun's discovery, the Boris Karloff horror film The Mummy was closely modeled on the story of this famous find. But of course, there was no curse. If Tutankhamun wanted revenge, why spare Howard Carter, the man who actually found him and lived to tell the tale? The expedition mortality rate was no higher than you'd expect among the Imperial British at the time. Lord Carnarvon should have been more wary of mosquito bites. Even without the beguiling legend of the curse, the tale of how Tutankhamun's tomb was discovered is a thrilling encounter with archaeology at its most spectacular.
1,000%, yeah.
Today's archaeologists stress patient analysis of small pieces of pottery from carefully measured trenches, a scientific approach pioneered in Egypt by the Victorian great Sir William Matthew Flinders Petrie. By Petrie's modern scientific standards, Carter and Carnarvon were naive and out of touch, looking for lost treasure like characters in some boy's own story. Yet anyone lucky enough to see Tutankhamun and his burial objects in the Egyptian Museum in Cairo wonders in awe at the sheer richness of this panoply of exquisite art and design. From his chairs and games to his golden mask, the young pharaoh and his lifestyle survive as the ash imprisoned people of Pompeii. And where I'm going to end, because I really want to talk about Pompeii one day.
Yes, yeah. Pompeii, wow, yeah. That was an amazing article and script that you put together, Archie, because that ending was really powerful. And I think at the end of the day, yes, it's being able to step back thousands and thousands of years and see.
Oh, God, what, absolutely.
Yeah, it's just really phenomenal. I believe in it. Of course I believe in it.
There's too many coincidences. There's too many coincidences.
Yeah. But I also think that, you know, with Lord Carnarvon, I think maybe it wasn't as blunt as like the inscriptions might have like wanted to convey and kind of did convey. Maybe like the curse wasn't as blunt, but I feel like I'm loving the whole idea that Howard Carter saw that jackal, you know what I mean? And he had 35 years, like, you, maybe it was just kind of subtle, like, we're watching you, but we're not gonna, like, you know, release our scarabs and eat you into a, you know, gooey, juicy skeleton.
As seen on that documentary, The Mummy, with Brendan Fraser.
With Brendan Fraser and Arnold Vosloo. Rachel Weisz, who I think is amazing and wonderful and gorgeous. Oh, God, I love him, too. I really love him. Getting total sidebar, but
right.
Love him in the help me, zombie movie, Mila Jovovich. Koi's playing the games right now. Koi. Zombie games you're playing.
What?
Zombie games you're playing.
What about it?
What name? What's the name? It's slipping my mind.
As many.
Just games? The name. The with Alice that you don't have. Alice.
Oh, Resident Evil.
Resident Evil.
Oh, Resident Evil. And he's in Star Trek Discovery.
Oh yeah. See, you lost me. I veered off at Trek.
See. Yeah, you started talking about that. I'm like, oh, okay, well, she's going to work on that. Well, I got Star Trek Discovery. Yay, yeah. Me.
Thank you. Resident Evil, ladies and gentlemen, our logo creator, my beautiful son, Koi. Anyway, yeah. So
wait, I'm in this episode?
Yeah, sorry. He's like, wait, I'm in this episode? Just for a hot second. helping your stupid mom. Anyway, I just think that the whole idea is just... everything about it is fascinating. Even if there were no curse, like you said at the end, like just being able to see how this man lived and how he was buried and died, I think is really amazing and fascinating. I love it. I was really hoping. Yeah. Yeah. I was really hoping when I chose this that you'd be really interested. I'm like, this kind of seems like right up Archie's historical alley. Like he really loves stuff like this. So I'm glad that you kind of found yourself in some really interesting rabbit holes as you researched. So.
Right. I did. That was a good choice. Good job.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. I'd love to do the curse ones like James Dean's car and, you know, this is a good one. So yeah, guys, that was the Curse of King Tut, or also known as the Curse of the Pharaohs. Let us know. What do you think? Do you believe it? Do you think that everybody's going to be a little bit more wary of mosquito bites after hearing it? Like, talk to us. Let us know what you think. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. I wish Laura had been here for it. So to that end, that's the end of the episode. I am going to, we've got a couple of things we want to talk to you guys about. Thank you for sticking in with us. We got the best part we save for the end. We have a really fun announcement. Archie's going to talk about that here. He's going to tell you guys what the fun announcement is. And then I'm just going to kind of pile on because I love to hear myself talk. and I'm really sad that I'm missing my very first episode of History of a Haunting ever next week. But more excited to move into my house and I don't want us to miss out on the momentum. So
as you should be.
Yeah. So Arch, tell him.
All right. We are having a contest.
Yes.
For the month of May. So starting today, May 1st, every person who rates, reviews, and subscribes is entered into a drawing to win a $100 Visa gift card.
Yes. Yes. So we thought we would shamelessly beg for reviews. Why not?
Why not?
Yeah. So everybody who rates, reviews, and subscribes on any platform, it can be Apple Podcasts, it can be Stitcher, Spotify, whatever. Everybody who rates, reviews, and subscribes from today, May 1st through Monday, May 31st, will be entered into a drawing. And Archie and I are going to keep track of all of that. There are some rules. I'm going to get to the rules here in just a second, but Archie and I are going to keep track of that. And then we are going to announce the winner live on Facebook. We will also announce the winner on all of our various social media platforms, but we're going to announce the winner live on Facebook. Archie's coming here to visit me over Memorial Day weekend. And so on June 1st, he and I we'll do a Facebook Live and we will draw the winner's name out of a beautiful hat or maybe just a bowl in my kitchen. maybe a big wine glass.
Or a bucket if we get enough people.
Right, yeah. Maybe a shot glass for the two of you. No, but what we want is we want to get more rates, more reviews, more subscribers. It helps us to be found more easily in the search engines of these different podcast stations. So we are going to, shamelessly beg and bribe you guys to, you know, rate, review, subscribe. Here are the rules. It is only valid for reviews that are left between May 1st, 2021 and May 31st, 2021. So for the entire month of May, rate, review, and subscribe. Here's how you get entered into the contest. What you need to do is you have to email us a screenshot of your submitted review and rating. Email that screenshot to us to the podcast email, hoahpodcast@gmail.com. We will then put your name on a piece of paper and we'll drop it into a giant wine glass. And then as the names roll in, like I said, it's just going to be a big barrel drawing, or maybe just three. and Archie and I will draw the winner on June 1st, live on Facebook. And then we will certainly reach out and contact you right away, that you are the winner. Please, rates, reviews, and subscriptions that help us to
help us refine.
Yeah. Help us refine. So I think it's kind of funny that we started out with, we got a good-ish review, but then, you know what I mean? Some suggestions, like when we talked about the very beginning of the show, they don't like the banner. They want just get jump right into the history and the hauntings. Some reviews we'll take into consideration, and we have before, kind of tweaked some stuff. But others, you know, our style and our format is our style and our format. So some will just be like, thanks for giving us a shot. But let us know. So yeah, it helps us, you know, to be more easily found in searches and things like that. So we definitely want to thank all of you in advance. For those of you who participate, again, rate, review, and subscribe during the entire month of May, starting today, May 1st, and ending on Monday, May 31st, which is Memorial Day here in the United States. To be entered into the contest, you have to send us a screenshot and email us a screenshot of your submitted review to our email address, hoahpodcast@gmail.com. We'll see how many we get. And then, yeah, the winner gets a $100 Visa gift card. So, yeah, also one review per person. Yeah, we do have a way of knowing that you're doing that. So be legit, be honest, submit the one time. Just, you know, be cool about it. Any kind of review, give us your feedback. If you love us, great. If you have suggestions, great. If you don't love us, but you did give us a try, great. Every review will be accepted and entered into the drawing, unless you say horrible, really awful, shitty things to us in the review. And then in which case, if you're abusive and gross, you absolutely will not be included in the drawing.
And probably banned from all of our other platforms.
Uh-huh, so, 1,000%.
Yeah, bear that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So I think that's it. Arch, is that it? I don't have anything else.
I think so. Just you can find us all over social media, everywhere you find anything else you might find on social media.
But we're way cooler than that stuff.
Sometimes we're lame.
Well, I mean, yeah, kind of.
Yeah. But it's always at HOAH Podcast and www.hoahpodcast.com. And
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok.
All those things.
Yes. Also, we are going to be launching a YouTube channel that is going to be a part and parcel with our podcast. That's going to be launching in August of this year. So we're super excited about that. We got a lot of really fun stuff to bring you in the YouTube version of us.
I hope so.
Yeah, or she's like, do we? Did I miss that meeting? I'm not really sure. Anyway, guys, we love you and be good to Archie and Laura. I will be absent from next week's episode, but yeah, I'm going to be monitoring the email account. So, you know, rate, review, and subscribe. Send us your proof and we'll enter you into the contest for $100 Visa gift card. And I love you. I will miss you. I have never missed an episode and I hope I don't in the future. But if I do, I know that the podcast is in very, very good hands. Laura is a little stressed about it. so be very sweet and very kind to her because she's wonderful and amazing. And I have all the faith in the world.
All right. No, that's it.
All right, guys. Well, as always,
take care, everybody.
Yes, take care, everybody. Stay safe out there because you never know who
or what
is listening. Also, words are hard and sometimes people suck, but Box wine is always, always there for you. All right. Thank you so much. All Marcy, right. We love you. Sarah, thanks for joining Patreon. Archie, I love you so much. I'm going to miss you next week. But I'll see you in a couple of weeks. So
okay,
it's a fair trade.
All right.
All right, guys. Bye. We'll see you next week. Bye.